another week of the KF Press Review Show. Coach Ferentz stands at the podium and answers questions. David and I hop on a day later and try to decipher the ins and outs of Iowa Hawkeye football through coach's eyes. If you listen closely, you might just get a few delicious crumbs. Is KF open to a quarterback change? He might be. Let's have a day. Let's go. Run it. Run the ball. David, why didn't we run the ball more inside the 5-yard line?
What a transition, man, from the off the camera to on the
record. That?
Yeah, it
was professional very, very over soon. Here.
Yeah. That's a good question, man. I mean, not even just that, but why would you not give the ball to Caleb Johnson inside the 5-yard line? The guy that's averaging 9 yards a carry up until that point.
Feels kind of like a Marshawn Lynch situation in the Super Bowl.
I know we have a lot to dive in here, but that was kind of my biggest gripe about the situation. Like, if you have first and goal from the 1 and you have first and goal from the 3 and they have not been able to stop the run, I give the ball to Caleb Johnson 4 times. And if they stop you 4 times, then they get the ball at the 1-yard line. I think you live with it, even if you don't get the 3, at least at 1 of the 2 times.
Hindsight's always 20/20, right?
Yep.
We did try and run the ball, I believe, on one of those possessions. I'm not sure if it was where we were 2 yards out or 3 yards out. I think we got they got great pressure, which caused us to go backwards a little bit. And I think that's something that gets lost in translation when you look at – you're just looking at things on paper. And so, you forget that Iowa State has players that make plays too.
Yeah.
They're getting paid NIL dollars to make plays and win games too. And so, yeah, like, they made a great play on that.
But I think so, too. I think they were running – Iowa was running a 14 personnel, and my big gripe about that was, one, you took out Caleb. Because, again, I like Kamari Moulton. I think
Caleb's
got to
be in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Two, and when was he in the game? It was when they scored the 3-yard touchdown, right? He was in. They scored.
He could essentially do no wrong. There was nothing – there was no reason why he shouldn't be in the game.
And the other part is when Iowa lined up in 14 personnel, they had, with all due respect to Johnny Pascuzzi, asking him to block Dominique Orange one-on-one, that's exactly why that play failed. I mean, that's just not a good matchup that he's not going to win the majority of the time, with all due respect to him.
I do feel like we were more creative play calling-wise. It's one of the things I wrote down on the notes here after I just watched the press conference from yesterday, where David Eichel did not ask a question, by the way.
I did not yesterday. It was kind of just a very interesting press conference, and I was a little bit surprised that they kept tying things back to 2002, and I was obviously not around for that year. I actually did go to that Orange Bowl, though.
That in 2009? Season.
No, that was 2003 when they played USC, when they returned the opening kick, and that's the game ended there. It was actually really, really weird. First time ever.
Wow. You went to that game?
I was at that game, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
What a full circle moment for you.
It was pretty fun. But yesterday's press conference was interesting on a variety of fronts. I'm very interested what happens at 11 a.m. today because we get Liddell Betts today, and I'm going to ask about Jazzy and Patterson because from yesterday's kind of talking point with Kirk, it seems like there's only 3 guys really right now in that running back rotation. So Jazz might be the odd guy out right now.
He did say that. I forgot about that. I didn't even pick up on that. We've all been considering this as a 4-back, and we've talked about it, right? There's a lot of reps to go around, but at some point there's also only so many reps to go around, especially if you have a back like Caleb who is putting out all Big Ten numbers.
He's all American numbers right now. I mean, he's the 4th leading rusher in the nation, and he missed the first half. Remember?
Wow, he's 4th in the country right now for yards.
Yes,
100. Got to have like 150 average or something like that.
I think he's got 304 right now, and again, that's in 6 quarters of play.
Jesus.
So
Yeah, so you got a guy like that, you're not going to find – there's going to be limited reps for 2 and 3, let alone four.
I mean, think about this, too. Like, LeSean Williams, I mean, the thing that stuck out to me yesterday is it sounds like LeSean Williams is healthy, too.
That's what Kirk said. He said he made a play the other day in practice that where he cut, and Kirk kind of thought, oh, he's back.
And he's still only getting a handful of carries right now.
Interesting. It's interesting. Maybe it's something they need to dive into a little more as far as, you know, using a fresh back. But nonetheless, the running game hasn't been much of the issue.
No.
Other than scoring inside the five. Welcome in, by the way. 5 minutes in, we just jumped right back into that conversation. We're here with the KF Press Review Show that Ike Holt and I are going to be doing all season long, every week. Wednesdays comes out around noon. They did keep tying things back to 2002, and I actually had a similar thought to that kind of was it mid-game or after the game the other day. And I think what's funny about that 2002 season is it is looked at as the start of a three-year span of probably the greatest 3 years in the KF era.
I think you could certainly make the argument for it.
And it's looked at 20 years later, we all love the 2002 season. Great season. It was awesome.
Runner-up Heisman, Brad Banks.
Brad Banks.
Dallas Clark, Bob Sanders.
Absolute squad. Yep. But I would love to go back. And there wasn't Twitter or social media back then like there is now. But if there was, I would love to see the online commentary, the online narrative after that game. What would Twitter have been like? What would Facebook and you know the interwebs have been like if 2002 Iowa State happens? And I bet there was a lot of people that were feeling a lot of the same things. And back then, you weren't the beginning of that season wasn't crowded with 12-team playoff. There's a real chance for us to make this 12-team playoff this year.
Yeah.
They weren't even in the 4-team playoff back then. It's basically just the top 2 teams in the country. And so bowl games meant a lot more. There wasn't as much of this feeling of, oh, our playoff hopes really just got dashed down to very little percentage chance now. So now it feels like there's nothing to be excited about for the rest of the season. But I guarantee there would have been a lot of similar things. And now we look back 20 years later and we love that season, which is what I tried to. We actually recorded our preview episode for the Troy game this week last night, and we tried to be pretty heavy on the fact that you don't know where this season's going to go. You really don't. You look at it on paper and you think, well, we probably have a good chance to win all of our games other than Ohio State. It might be a little bit more dicey now that we've shown, you know, and we lost to Iowa State. Some of these other games might be closer than we would have liked. Nebraska's looking all right. There's a couple other teams that look okay on the schedule.
Nebraska's looking good, man.
They are looking good.
I can't even – I know people don't want to hear it. They look like they're going to be a very legit team this year.
But that's a good thing, David.
It is.
I know people don't like to admit it. We've had this conversation as well in the past couple weeks. But Iowa State and Nebraska being good – are not bad things. It's
only
bad
things. Wisconsin to be good too. And yeah, Michigan State's 2-0 right now too. I was very surprised they beat Maryland last week.
Yeah, huge win for them against the Terps this weekend. I think that was an 8-point line, and they end up showing that they might be a little better than people thought. But this is the knock that Iowa's had on their schedule for the last, you know, with the Big Ten West being, you know, a weaker conference or division specifically, is like, We don't get any respect. We win these games. And then people like me are the ones who are optimistic and are like, hey, we win 8, 9, 10 games a year. And people are like, cool, it's in the Big Ten West. And your out-of-conference games are Iowa State and 2 other people that you're supposed to beat.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, but whoever's on your schedule, you still want to win games. And then they're like, yeah, but the schedule, it's just not a good schedule. And it matters now. That matters now when you're talking about a 12-team playoff where non-champions, non-conference champions are going to – their resumes are going to be looked at. We need good teams on our schedule. I think that's what gets lost in this past weekend as well, is Iowa State's a good football team. They're not an average football team. They're a good football team. They might even be a better than good football team. Well, that has yet to play out. them being good on our schedule, Nebraska being a potential. Think about it this. If Nebraska walks into it's in Kinnick this year, yeah?
It is.
They walk into Kinnick the last game of the year, and we are 9-2, and they are 9-2. Think about the implications there. And if Nebraska is ranked, like, that's a good resume builder. Iowa State somehow does really well in the Big 12. They've got not the meat of their schedule is in their last three games. We actually looked at that yesterday as well. But let's say they are somehow somewhere ranked in the 15 through 20 range when it comes to the end of the season. And there are one of two losses. Maybe let's call Ohio State the other loss. These are good things for us, but
right now
there's a lot of, and I'm sure you get it too. I saw you respond to the, I don't know.
I respond to one guy, but there's just so many right now.
Some random Twitter account was like, does anybody else have trouble listening to podcasts after a loss? And like, I know you and I see that, creators of the content, and we're just like, oh no, no one's clicking or downloading the shows. It's tough. And it's like, hold on though. Let it wear off. Let's get a win versus Troy. Let's start building that back up. This can still be an exciting season. There's still reasons to show up every Saturday.
Everybody's going to be back into it if Iowa beats Troy and they go back to Minnesota and they go at Minnesota next week.
Especially if they beat Minnesota.
I'll tell you, Tyler, that they have to beat Minnesota because if you lose to Iowa State and Minnesota with this team,
People are going to be
pre-checked out because guess what? Then it's a bye week, so it marinates even longer. And then guess what? You come back and you're playing at Ohio State, who for my money, maybe along with Georgia, are the best two teams in the country.
Yeah, the Minnesota. Oh, yeah, I haven't looked ahead that much because it's just not our nature to really do so. But assuming you win this week against Troy, that Minnesota game is probably – it's probably the biggest Minnesota game since, I don't know, 2019 when they were ranked and they came to
Canada. I was going to say, is that when AJ completely decimated the quarterback?
Yeah. They had a great – I think he had like three sacks that game.
They had to put in the backup, didn't they? The backup quarterback of the last drive of the game.
Sounds right. That was a big game. I know 2017 when – wait, what did we do in 2017? No, I mean, 2015 was a big game when they came to Kinnick and we had the blackout unis and we were going for win number 10. So that's one of the bigger Minnesota matchups. It is also in Minnesota. So that
night game.
6:30 kick, right? Just got announced a couple days ago.
NBC. Yep.
So that's going to be big time. I mean, that is going to be a big game. And you're right. If the Hawks, I hate to think about that. If the Hawks are looking are in week six and they're 2-3 with losses to Iowa State, Minnesota, and then Ohio State,
people are checked out. I'm not even gonna mince words.
It's not really a discussion at that point. The season is even if you win out, the season is an underperforming season.
Yeah, and I want to make sure I'm clear, too. When I say it's over, I'm talking strictly from, like, the fan base's expectations and, like, my preseason prediction. But, like, I'm not trying to minimize what it means to the players in that locker room. I think those are two totally separate entities.
Yeah, there's so much to play for on the inside that goes past other things.
Yeah.
But in the eyes and expectations of the season's potential, especially in the year of the first Big 12-team playoff, yeah, the season would be a loss at that point as far as top-end potential. And not only that, but that's assuming you went out and go 9-3. Your outlook at that point is very, very, very dire. So Minnesota will get there. Fortunately, we get to do this every week, David, so we'll get to have this conversation in another week, and we'll be looking ahead to that Minnesota game. And hopefully we have a few more answers. But I think Kirk really it was weird. Several of the questions asked yesterday did bring it back to that 2002 game. And a lot of the talk and his message to open the press conference was about setbacks and how to come back from that. Being on the inside, I know the messaging and sort of the language used in a week like that where you're trying to come back. And for those wondering, they turn the page. they actually turn the page, especially once Monday morning hits. And it's maybe not even so much just because they're good at it, but because they have no other option. Like, you are immediately into watching Troy film. You're going against Troy looks. Kirk's
very adamant about that every single time we ask him about it too. He goes like, no, like, we have to turn the page. Like, there is no reason for us to sit there and marinate. There's going to be regrets. There's going to be the what ifs. I mean, I think Kirk yesterday called that 2002 one of the most disappointing losses of his career.
Yeah.
Of his life in that game. And I'll be honest, I think after this season, I think he's going to look back at this year's Iowa State game and think the same thing. I mean, Tyler, I think from my media standpoint, this is probably the most disappointing loss and collapse since North Dakota State.
Don't remind me.
I know. I thought about not bringing it up to give you some PTSD flashbacks.
That's there, probably
in the way they lost. It's not like the quality of opponent. It's the coaching decisions. It's the inability to execute. And it's like we saw Iowa not be able to Iowa its way to the finish line.
Yeah.
And that's what was so surprising about it.
What hurts the most is they hang their hat on this ability to get up. So I'm sure you saw the stat when the boys are leading by 8 points or more.
Yep.
They're like 72-2 in the last 74 games.
I tweeted that out. That was just before the Iowa State loss too.
And so we get up by 8 and you're like, cool, lock it in. Like, throw your house on the money line, the in-game money line. Iowa's winning the game.
Yeah.
And even in a lot of those games where we've been up 8, it does get dicey at times. Or at minimum, it becomes a thing where, we took our foot off the gas. We really don't feel as comfortable as we'd like to here. We do end up squeaking out the win, but people do not like what's been dubbed in our YouTube comments on this channel as turtle mode.
Yeah.
Where we just go into our shell. And KF, obviously a biased player under KF for 5 years, but even I can very fairly admit the way that KF leads a program offensively, or at least the culture of us offensively for the past decade, 2 decades, is there is no like foot on the gas, like let's run this thing out of the building.
Yeah.
There is like turtle mode is a decent way of putting it. And I don't know why. I don't know why we just get up and put the clamps on. We're capable of doing it. But I go back to that Tim Lester quote from the summer where he's like, if we don't have to make it close, like we won't. Like, we'll just continue to score points. And I hope that opens Coach Ferentz's mind a little bit. But man, it backfired here this past weekend, and that's why it feels so bad. It's like, because you normally 99 times out of 100, 72 times out of 74, you walk away and you're like, ugh, didn't love it, but we got the win.
I walked away from that game, though, even if they missed that field goal, even if Iowa gets that first down to end the game before they have to punt it away, Tyler, I would have said Iowa did not earn the win. They escaped. It was a totally survive in advance. I mean, Iowa State completely earned that game. I'm really not going to hear any argument otherwise for it. I mean, you have
they won the game.
And this is where I want to go with this, too. And, you know, you being inside the program can provide a little bit of perspective. I'm just stunned by Kirk's loyalty to Cade when he hasn't proven it in an Iowa uniform. And I'm not saying to bench I'm not saying to bench Cade because I'm not at that point. I'm not inside the practice facility. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But two things come to mind. One, it's a little bit questioning to me because you have a Big Ten caliber quarterback as your backup. You have a guy that has won Big Ten football games and probably be starting for Northwestern right now if he decided not to transfer. But two, Kirk Ferentz after the game talking about how they're waiting for Cade to get back into game shape. That's a completely inexcusable comment to me.
I think I heard that too. And I think Coach in his coach speak throws some things out there to you guys that sometimes give off the wrong idea. And he's just saying it to answer a question. And I chalked that comment up, and you can call bullshit on me. Anybody who's listening to this, you can say that KF actually believes that that's what they're trying to do. I think that's just an answer. I think we got a more clear picture today. Most notably, it was a little bit, it was a little comment, but when he was asked about Cade, he didn't say, you know, he's getting there, he's doing the right things. He said the words, we are counting on him to play better.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I don't know if anybody caught that. It was kind of just at the end of a few sentences. And he's like, yeah, we're counting on him to play a little better. I wouldn't even say that he would have admitted that when Petras was struggling or did, like, he backed them hard. And
yeah,
I think that with Brendan Sullivan as the backup, I get the sense he's more open to making a change. And I think his loyalty to Cade, this is just pure speculation on my part.
Sure.
I think his loyalty to Cade for right now, and I think it's short, and maybe that's what people want to hear. I think it's because in his mind, he likes to let processes play out. Cade didn't have last year to have a full season really work into the, you know, the groove. Now we bring in Tim Lester. I think game one looked great. No reason to bench him. Game two is the Seahawks series. There wasn't a reason to bench him at halftime. Now you get into the third quarter, you're in a tight ball game. Is that really a great spot to bring?
I agree with you on that. You can't make the change then.
Guy hasn't played a rep all day. He's cold for 2 hours. And I think people overestimate the ability of a guy who's just been on the bench for 2 hours to come in. And he's not Johnny Manziel, right? Like, we're not going to get this like crazy spark. That's like magic. So probably not a good spot to do it in the Iowa State game. Now would be the time to maybe do it. But I think the thing he's holding on to is Cade's had a camp and two game days under this offense. Can we give him three games? Like, I think we might be hanging on this next game.
I think it's half. I think he's going to give him one half.
Yeah. And Kevin said the same thing on our episode that you guys listening will hear tomorrow. Kevin agreed that maybe at halftime of this game, if it's not going well, that's a good spot. And I tend to think KF might pull. I think he might pull the trigger on that.
I don't think he has a choice, Tyler, because, and again, I'm not advocating for Cade to be benched right now, because what other spot in the season outside of an injury is a good time to put in Brendan Sullivan?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Especially with a new offensive coordinator.
At a prime time, you can't maybe you can't put him against Ohio State. That's just setting your guy up for failure. I mean, there's only so many spots. If I look at this Troy game as being the game that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Kay to go out there and get it done. But the other side of it for me is they can't afford to wait any longer if he struggles, because you have 18 returning starters. Think about how I know we want to let this season play out. I'm only speaking from how important it is to have a great season this year.
Yeah.
Because the amount of unknowns going into next year is unlike anything Iowa football has experienced in maybe
in
Kirk Ferentz's entire career.
Yep.
Because
yep.
they are going to lose everybody potentially. I'm talking 15 to 17 starters.
It's going
to
be very interesting next year. This show could be very interesting next year if we do it again.
Hey, got no shortage of talking points, at least.
Tons of talking points. I agree with you. I think talking it out there with you even makes me feel more confident in how I think about it. I don't know if there's been a better spot than halftime of this upcoming game as a check-in of, okay, now's the time. You've got a game. Because here's the thing. There's nothing to lose, really, if you throw Brendan Sullivan. Like, likely we're going to win this game. If you can get a couple points on the board against Troy, you could let the defense win the game. Who cares? Even if you put Brendan Sullivan in, you take the chance. Okay, if he plays poorly, all right, we're back to Cade. Cade's our guy from Minnesota. Now, people might argue that messes with Cade's head, whatever, but if you make him the starter again and say, no, actually, we tried Brendan, we're going with you, we like what you're doing better, I think his head, his mental space is fine. But I think this is the perfect spot. And I guess at this point, we just have to hope that KF thinks it's the perfect spot too, because...
And at the same time too, Tyler, I contrary to popular belief, I don't blame Kirk for backing Cade fully, because he wants his guy to feel like that his coach has his back publicly 100% of the time.
There's some other factors here that I know people don't like in the new college football landscape, but we paid the motherfucker a lot of money too.
You know, I hate to say it. In my opinion, I think that's just you chalked up as a bad investment, but you still play the guy that's the best guy to go win.
That's absolutely. I don't care if you have to play somebody who's been paid $0. You put the best guy out there. But it might, if a guy is already out there like Cade, it might get him an extra quarter or two or an extra game or two.
I understand that too.
If you happen to have invested half of your NIL fund into him, and I don't know what the actual
Whatever it is, right? I mean, I think we've seen so many figures thrown out there. So I think that's a good point as well. But at the same time, I do wish Kirk would back his guy publicly, but also have some sort of inkling to be like, look, I'm not this hard-headed about it. I will make a change. But Kirk's been doing this so long, he's get back his guy publicly, and then – you know, on an instant, he might say, you know what? Never mind. I'm going to throw in Brendan Sullivan.
I just that little comment that says we're counting on him to play a little better makes me think. I've heard KF talk a lot before. And that was the one thing, maybe the biggest thing that I took out of maybe a long snapper mention in the press conference, which was huge, by the way. We love
it. Yeah.
Elkin getting all the play. Leader in the special teams room. We love to hear it, Luke. Let's go. Reese, get your head out of your ass. Let's get some 48-yarders and not some 40-yarders. I think there's a chance.
It's also worth noting, really random, Xavier Wampa is going to start this week at strong safety. I mean, as you guys kind of remember, he was benched after the 75-yard touchdown. Cohen Entringer took over. Entringer said he has not taken any starting reps this week. And obviously Wampa is listed on the depth chart as a starter. Kirk kind of backed him publicly too. And, you know, for Wampa, I still believe in his ceiling. I think he's an NFL starter one day. I just think that he needs to continue to grow. And I think he needs to, he's a great kid. Two, he's a hard worker. I just think he needs to find a way to become a more impactful playmaker. And that guy that we saw that he was in high school, I fully believe he can be at the Big Ten level. We've seen flashes of it already.
It's almost like you and I shared notes before this because I have two notes left. And the first one is Xavier Cohen situation. That's all I put down. We talked about this on the episode for tomorrow too. And Kevin gave his thoughts as a former defensive back / guy on the defensive side of the ball. It's interesting. You wonder if he's just like, is this guy just going to be late to bloom into his potential at the college level? He hit this really early peak in high school where it shot him to a 5-star ranking. And then, you know, college speed hits, you realize you're not as big of a fish as you once were. And it takes a lot of effort and learning. Oh, and by the way, the position he's playing is not easy mentally. Yeah. Like there's a lot of mental, not just physical. As much as some of the people we've had in the past make it look easy. So I agree. I think it's really tough with the expectations that he had coming in. I don't think by any means he's been a bad player for Iowa.
No.
It is interesting to see them make a change the other day to Cohen. And, you know, they talked about how he's had like an incredible recovery from his injury and he has missed a lot of time as well. I guess the good news is, you know, we're pretty deep. We've got dudes on the defensive side. It will be interesting to see that develop a little bit because I think even Xavier said after the game, maybe when he was interviewed or something that, was it today?
I'm trying to, well, I think, are you talking about when Jay Higgins took full accountability for,
well, he took accountability and Kevin said that Jay was being a very good teammate there.
I think we all kind of knew that too.
I thought Xavier somewhere said he understands that he needs to get better. He needs to find a way to develop more into his career and something like that. So I don't think Xavier's unaware of maybe him falling somewhat short on the 5-star expectations. I think he will be just fine. He's got one more year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been of the belief he's going to go to the NFL after this season. He still very well could. He could have a strong final 10, 11 games and end up going.
That's the other thing is we're two games into the season. We could look back in 2.5 months and be like, oh, those last 10 games, actually, they're a lot changed. And to be honest, it's usually the case.
Tyler, how much when you're a cornerback or your safety, I mean, how much do they rely on athleticism and measurables when you're going through the draft process? And you look at Xavier Wampa, those measurables ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, no, he's got it all. He's got everything that I didn't have. last thing, I'm going to bring it back around to the goal line thing. And I, again, when you listen to Kirk, you have to be really, really tuned in to the subtle stuff that doesn't seem like something. And somebody asked him about whatever at the end of the press conference, and he kind of just finished with saying, you know, we're focused on trying to score a touchdown when we're inside the 5-yard line. That's what I'm worried about right now. And again, kind of throw away, like, tongue in cheek, like made a little bit of a joke out of it, but he's pissed about that.
He is.
He's pissed about that, and rightfully so.
I mean, that lost in the game. I mean, I know there are other mistakes, but I mean, I think you and I are in full agreement. Like, if Iowa scores even one touchdown in those situations, the game's over.
So, yeah, it hurts so bad to think about. So I think they probably put a little bit of an extra emphasis on that. Again, I like some of the motion, some of the action that was going on those goal line plays. Lester's plays look different than Brian's plays. That's for sure.
Without question.
And I think another, maybe you don't notice things when they're not there, but like, no questions from the media and you guys today about the play calling, right? Like, it's a big switch up from the last couple of years. Not to say it won't come later in the year, but Lester has not been questioned at all yet. And
the only thing we questioned that was kind of like that was the 2-point conversion try. And I think that's been overblown to some degree. And I mean, I think back to Kirk's answer that post game, he said, look, yeah, we decided to do it, but I'm more concerned about the goal line. That's when he said that. And I said, yeah, that I 100% understand that. I didn't mind the call going for two. Captain Hindsight here, I would have gone for the extra point because I would trust the defense to keep him out of the end zone two times, but that's just True. Me. I disagreed with the play call to throw the ball when they've had zero success throwing the ball to that point.
Yeah, I think.
And they just scored from the 3-yard line.
Yeah, the emphasis to go or not go, or to go for two or not, isn't as important as the play call once they decided to go for two.
Yeah.
And I think Brady Ross, friend of the program on Twitter, made that point and said, like, hey, if that is if the fade in our offense to a freshman is the call, then maybe we just take the one, right? Because that's not really our bread and butter. You know, we don't have Noel or whoever their tall receiver is, Higgins. We don't have a guy like that. We don't throw fades to score points in Iowa.
Well, I think about this. I mean, I think about Iowa's red zone offense for the past 7-8 years. I think the only offense I can remember even being remotely, you know, I'll say competent when it comes to throwing the ball in the red zone and scoring was maybe one of Nate Stanley's teams.
I was going to say 2019 maybe, or 20.
I don't even know about that.
2018?
2018 maybe.
I can't say we were great in the red zone in my senior season or overly great. So, yeah, you're right. Red zone is a huge thing.
Especially passing the ball. Like, that's been a bigger issue than even just scoring or field goals. Like, they just have not had success throwing the ball.
I think, again, call me a homer, bias, former player, whatever it is. I tend to think with everything I've seen from Coach Tim Lester that they will grow a lot
in that
area. There was a lot of pre-snap motion and different kind of look once the ball was snapped, and call it trying to do too much. But when those plays do eventually get executed, those are the plays that people will be like, oh, we've got a little junk when we get down in there in the red zone. We got some spice to throw at these guys. And that's what we've been asking for.
Exactly. I think
now,
that's
when Caleb Johnson's run.
Yeah. I'll say there's two things people need to pay close attention to, right? One, the schemes and the things they're trying to do. It's year one, game three we're going into. You have to look at what they're trying to do first, and they're adding some extra flair. So I think Tim Lester right now, to me, he's doing the right things. He's proven to be, I think, the right hire at this time. Of course, results are going to matter at the end of the day. But two, there was a lot of talk about George Barnett, rightfully so, the past couple of years. That offensive line looks fantastic. I think the offensive line is one of the farthest things from the problem. But the other thing that we have not mentioned enough, Luke Lachey getting zero catches is absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, got it. Got to find the tight end more. Got to find the tight end more. And I don't even have really much more to say about that other than, you know, we probably have found the tight end too much due to a lack of receiving production the last couple years.
Absolutely.
But we can't regress to your average football team that throws at a tight end twice and he gets no catch. Like, that cannot be. That's not Iowa. So we got to find a middle ground there. And he had a great first game. I think he had 6 or 8 catches.
I think he had 5 for 68, I want to say.
Yeah, that's That's what we want. We don't want him to have 11, but we can't have zero, right? And we just have to use the weapons that we have. He's one of our best weapons. Yep. So, all that being said, here we go. Troy is on the schedule, and you got to play who you play and win the games that you can win, and that's the one we've got in front of us. So, David, thank you for joining me again on the KF Press Review Show. Everybody listening, tune in tomorrow for the preview show. Grant G-Bone, the producer, has some great one-liners in that. And we give our betting picks for the weekend. I took the Hawks. I'll just spoil it now.
What was the 22.5?
Yeah, 22.5. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I would take that.
Yeah.
Not financial advisor, by the way. Shocking.
No, not financial advice. Don't listen to us. Dumb. Thanks, David. Peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.